The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we kick off yet another week of broadcasting here in our beautiful facilities on the headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. I'll be here for a few more days before heading back to the UK. So it's great to be home. We had a beautiful wedding yesterday here in Edmond, which hopefully I can say a few things about at the end of the show, if there's some time left over. And also today, I want to talk to you a fair bit about the work. I know on Monday's programs, typically we cover some more of the stats and figures about this work, about the radio program, about the television programs that we're producing. And coming up in the second segment, we'll go through some of that, and also a number of emails that have come through in response to the spectacular news from last week. Of course, so much has been happening, and with the Brexit vote on Thursday, we'll talk here in just a bit about some of the continuing aftershocks from that or following that historic vote in Britain. But as I say, coming up in the second segment, we'll look at the TV response from this past weekend in the UK and also give you some stats about this program and the listening trends and how the audience was, nearly doubled in some ways for the website traffic. It was more than double. We'll get into that, as I say, later on. But first, the aftershocks of this historic vote, they continue to shake the world. This is from Spiegel Online. Talking about the future of Europe, and asks the question, so what? So what if the British are leaving? What's the big deal? Now, we've talked about some of this before, how that many in Europe are now seeing this not so much as a setback, but as an opportunity for Britain to come together and to be more integrated and to get rid of the one that was, dragging its feet with respect to many of the policies that were bringing Europe together more closely. Spiegel says a second benefit, I'm picking it up in the middle, it says a second benefit is that the British can now no longer block legislation when Europeans decide to join forces in areas where they are stronger together. The economic union must finally become reality so that national decisions can no longer jeopardize the common currency. The Eurozone, it says, needs a unified economic government. And then further down, with respect to security, it says here, a permanent shared headquarters is needed for increasingly important EU military missions in places like Mali and the Mediterranean, something that all EU countries want except for the British, who have blocked it. The British have been blocking these efforts to put together a united military force. And Spiegel says, this is good now. So what if the British are leaving? This is an opportunity for the EU. There are plenty of advantages to this news. We're following the results of that referendum. It says, and when it comes to foreign policy, it's high time that majority decisions, which have long been customary on issues such as environmental policy, are allowed. In addition, the refugee crisis has shown that a real European border control force is needed, as well as uniform asylum law and fair distribution of refugees. We need a unified force in Europe, and Britain has been the one to block this effort. So let them go, let them leave, and let us move forward. Stratfor said yesterday, we'll be watching the referendum frenzy on the continent as various Eurosceptic parties try to take advantage of the anxiety in Brussels. And so this piece talks about the other efforts in the Netherlands, in France, to put forward a referendum so that the people can raise their voice. It says, the European Union is on the verge of losing one of its members for the first time in history. Think about how historic this occasion is. The EU is about to lose one of its members, and this has never happened before. And think about the fact that the one it's losing is the very one that Herbert Armstrong said would leave or be kicked out. Britain will not be part of it. You know the quote well, because we've been reading it so often. This is historic. Stratford says the repercussions of Britain's departure from the bloc will ripple throughout continental politics, economics, and finances, shaking Europe to its core. Britain's biggest EU trade partners, which stand to be especially hit hard should Britain lose access to the common market, will desperately seek to expedite a free trade agreement between Brussels and London. So they're going to work hard to try to keep that free trade going, particularly Belgium and the Netherlands and Ireland. Those are Britain's biggest trade partners. But how will this impact some of the other members in this union? How will Brexit, in the end, change the world? Many are now acknowledging that's happening, but they don't have all the answers. They don't know. There, as I said on Friday's program, there's so much uncertainty. I want to take you back to something that Herbert Armstrong said with respect to Germany, because as you know, if you've been listening to this program, or if you've been visiting our website, you know that Britain's departure is only going to make Germany stronger. So what if the British are leaving? That's what many are saying in Germany. Many in the union now say, well, hey, forget about the two-year process to bring this divorce to its conclusion. Let's expedite things. Let's get them out sooner. Let them go. So what if the British are leaving? This article from 1956, it's Herbert Armstrong talking about the lessons that Germany learned from World War I and World War II. The lessons that Germany learned from its defeats. He said this, Mr. Armstrong did, and as I say, this is from 1956. So we're talking six decades ago. He says, this time the Germans plan to sidestep the causes of past defeats. Instead of exhausting their own strength by holding European nations as captives at the expense of vital Gestapo manpower, they plan to head and dominate a United States of Europe and add the manpower of those nations to their own military divisions. In other words, this time it's not going to be a conquest by the military in the early stages. It's going to be a conquest by economics, by politics. And that's what you have. It's just oversized at this point. The Bible says it's going to dwindle down to 10 powers in Europe, 10 kings, 10 nations. But without question, Germany is the dominant power, all the more so now that Britain is gone. Conrad Black at the National Post, he also sees this as a fresh start for Europe. And he says here, I predict that there will gradually emerge a German-led bloc, including the Baltic and Scandinavian countries. He lists some of them off here. He says, in former four-term Chancellor Helmut Kohl's expression, it will be a European Germany, not a German Europe. That's what he thinks. Really, it's going to be a German Europe. It will, to some degree, be the gross Deutschland sought by Bismarck, using the German words there. a huge or a big Deutschland, a big Germany, but assembled now by friendship, prosperity, and example. You think about the new method that Mr. Armstrong was writing about in 1956 and the lessons that Germany learned from the first two wars. Conrad Black says here, the Germans will probably want to retain a couple of weak members in the Euro to soften it and facilitate the sale of sophisticated German-engineered products abroad. In any event, it's assembled or brought together now by friendship. By friendship. That's what Mr. Armstrong was getting at in that 1956 quote. This time, the Germans plan to sidestep the causes of past defeats. They're not going to exhaust their own strength, their power, by holding European nations captive with their military. Instead, they're going to use the other nations in the Union to add to their manpower, to add to their power. GermanForeignPolicy.com, it sent out an email alert on Friday talking about, again, the earth-shaking effects of the British referendum. It's shaking up the EU, GermanForeignPolicy.com says. And it says Berlin's plans to use the EU for its own hegemonic policies. This is an organization within Germany. GermanForeignPolicy.com. Writing about how Berlin uses the EU for its own hegemonic policies. It says here, with a 72% turnout, 52% of the British voters opted to wave goodbye to the EU. This vote has a major impact on Berlin, not only because Europe's second largest economy after Germany's and a prominent military power will be leaving the EU and therefore no longer be available for German hegemonic policies imposed via the EU. So Germany can no longer impose its will on this neighbor, Britain. It says, finally, the Swedish foreign minister has explicitly warned of a spillover effect that could lead to a Swedish EU exit. So it's making some of the same points that many others have said, that this could be the first domino to fall, Britain's referendum on Thursday. But it says here, in the German media, demands are being raised to simply ignore the referendum and let the British Parliament vote in favor of remaining in the EU. There are those calling for that in the German media. And again, it's everyone's got a different opinion. There's the ones like from Spiegel that says, hey, who cares? Who cares if Britain leaves? And then there's others saying, who cares what the British voters said? Just stay in. Just impose your will on the people. Not very democratic at all. Think about those billboards in Britain in the lead up to the vote last Thursday. Halten the German advance. That's what many with the Leave campaign were saying. Look, Germany's dominating. Let's get out. And that'll weaken Germany. That's what they think. But it's not going to weaken Germany. Germany's getting stronger. The Financial Times here today talked about the shaky UK-US relationship, the so-called special relationship. And that relationship, of course, has been in trouble. It's been worsening, particularly with the current U.S. administration. But this article is about how that the U.S. increasingly will be looking to Germany as its top European ally. And this fits right in with Bible prophecy as well. Ephraim and Manasseh reaching out to their lovers, the ones that will betray them in the end. The Financial Times says, as one special relationship falters, another may beckon. The British vote to leave the EU could hasten a changing of the guard among Washington's European allies, with Germany replacing the UK as its most important partner. It says the reality is also that even before the British referendum, the U.S. had increasingly been looking to Germany. I mean, this was already happening. You heard on Friday's program President Obama's comment from a month or two ago about how that if Britain left, they may have to get into the back of the queue. This has already been a development, and it will hasten now with this latest vote. It says there's also a broad acknowledgement that the importance of Germany is bound to rise at the UK's expense. With its post-war reticence on using its military, Germany also has a different stance on security to the U.S. Well, then it goes and quotes a U.S. congressman saying that Germany needs to step it up. Germany needs to take the lead. Germany needs to get more involved in world events. Germany needs to build up its military. How quickly we forget history. And meanwhile, this special relationship between the UK and the United States, it's unraveling, just as the Bible said it would. Fighting against one another. The prophet Isaiah talks about Ephraim against Manasseh, and then the two of them together against Judah. There's another verse, I believe, in Hosea that talks about the band of the brotherhood being broken. Let me just play for you a clip by Herbert Armstrong. This is from a sermon. We're going to have to get into this sermon, I think, a little bit more in the weeks ahead. But the title speaks for itself. United States of Europe is coming. That's what he was saying in 1982. And in this particular clip, he's talking about just how, I mean, he's into his 90s now, and he's talking about how he's losing his eyesight, and he could hardly read and that sort of thing. I'll just play some of the bits around the key statement that I want for you to hear about this relationship between the United States and Great Britain. This is Herbert Armstrong from 1982.
I'm pretty well torn apart physically. I'm past 90 years of age now, and I still have to be the dynamo that keeps it going. I can hardly read. I just see out of one eye, and it's so blind I've bothered you, and I'm sorry, I apologize for having had you have to sit there while I struggle to try to read the Bible to you. But I do the best I can. And I hope you do the best you can, brethren. You know, I'm just reminded, last time I saw Mrs. Thatcher of England, the Prime Minister, as we were leaving, she said, well, there's one thing our two countries, the United States and Britain, must absolutely continue to hang together. And I said, well, if we don't hang together, we'll probably hang separately. And that's the way it is with us, brethren. We had better get on the track and be sure that we are there.
Now, he made that statement to make an obvious point about staying together, about being unified in the church. Hanging together, but he used the example there, as you heard, that if the United States and Britain don't hang together, they're going to hang separately. They're going to hang separately. Look, as I said on Friday's program, look at the division. I mean, how do you explain Scotland's position, to take one example? Here they're desperate to be included in the European Union. And they want out of the United Kingdom. They want out of the union that's their people, their brothers. And they want to hitch their fate to the power that's forming in Europe. And the same is happening, as that Financial Times piece brings out, with respect to the United States and Britain. The special relationship, it's unraveling. These two brothers are not hanging together. And so they're going to hang separately. That's what Mr. Armstrong said there in 1982. There's quite a few, as I alluded to on Friday, quite a few in the Leave campaign that think, well, this is, if we can just get through the initial setback of the pound plummeting and the stock markets around the world taking a beating, then the brighter days are ahead. A new day dawns in Britain. Well, right now, I mean, politics in Britain, it's chaotic. As you know, Mr. Cameron's set to resign, and even members of the Labour Party are resigning in protest against Jeremy Corbyn. Everyone's unhappy. Scotland's unhappy. Northern Ireland's unhappy. Now, there may be a resurgence. There's plenty of commentators that are saying once Britain takes one hit after another, then the other Union states are going to see that example and say, well, we better not leave the Union. But we know others are going to leave the Union. And so maybe in the short run, Britain will have some success, quote unquote. But in the long term, as Mr. Armstrong said there, if we don't hang together, we're going to probably hang separately. And then you factor in all the other prophecies. We know about the one that Britain will be no part of it. Britain won't be part of this European Union. That's what Herbert Armstrong said back in 1956. Britain will not be in that empire that's now forming in Europe. And this is something that we've been saying for decades. And in the next segment, I'll tell you about a few phone calls and contacts that we've made just since last Thursday. People that are well aware of what we've been saying for so many years. Well, together with that prophecy, Britain will not be part of it. Mr. Armstrong also had a lot to say about Britain being reduced to a second-rate power in the world. He had a lot to say about Britain being just absolutely losing its strength, its power, its influence. He had a lot to say about the revolution in Britain back in the 1950s and 60s, the revolution in morality, in culture, in religion. He had a lot to say about the sickness in Britain, the sick man of Europe. One of the plain truth issues back then had to say. Let's look at a few verses here before we conclude this segment. As I say, there's many other prophecies regarding Britain besides the one that they would not be in the empire that forms in Europe. Hosea 2 and verse 8, it says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." God says, look, you received all of this unmatched power and wealth. You amassed all of these blessings. And you didn't know that it came from me, or you haven't acknowledged that it came from me. Now, there was a time when Britain would have acknowledged their great God. There was a time there at the outset of World War II when they did cry out to God, when they did pray and fast for God's intervention. All of those blessings, though, were poured upon that little island and its worldwide empire because of promises made in the very first book of the Bible. Britain was the greatest empire this world has ever seen. And now look at what it's been reduced to. They're going to have to fight just to hold on to Scotland. Verse 9 says, therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. She's going to be exposed. She's going to be laid bare. Britain it's in deep debt, just like Spain and Greece, just like the United States. Its economy is not fundamentally sound, as Mr. Cameron said on Friday. Think of the trade war that could result from this. I mean, Britain ships so much of its goods to EU member states. And so many of those member states also are dependent on Britain to deliver their goods. Belgium, Netherlands, Ireland. Hosea chapter 4, a couple of pages over, it says in verse 1, hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. I mean, there's just no longer any truth. There's no longer any movement to look to God. It's either, as the debate was leading up to June 23rd, it's either look to the European Union or look to Britain. Look to ourselves. Britain chose the latter course, but it's not going to work out. Not the way so many in the Leave campaign hope that it will work out. Verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me, seeing you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. This is dangerous knowledge that God's given to us. There's a lot of people out there who know about what Mr. Armstrong said regarding the 10 nations, regarding Britain being no part of it, but that haven't done anything with it. They may tune in, they may listen in on occasion, or they may go and visit the website when something huge happens, like so many did on Friday. But it's like it says in Ezekiel 33, the message coming from God's work, it's like a lovely song. But you've got to do something with it. You've got to act on the knowledge. It says in verse 7, as they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. As they increased, as they multiplied in power and influence, all of these blessings, so did the sins multiply. Verse 17, Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Their drink is sour. They have committed whoredom continually. Her rulers with shame do love. I mean, this is a nation now that, well, really for the first time in its history, the majority, they consider themselves to be, well, not religious at all, not Christian. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment, not God's commandment, that's Hosea 5:11. But the commandments of men. And then Hosea 5 and verse 12 talks about Ephraim being like a moth-eaten garment. It might look good on the surface. It might look good on the hanger, but take it off and what happens? It just all falls apart. Britain needs to receive this warning. There's quite a few people in Britain, even that have had a history with Mr. Armstrong and with Ambassador College and with Brickett Wood and with the plain truth. The message continues to go out, God's warning in love, and the British people need to wake up to what's happening in their nation and in this world. Instead of fighting with each other, instead of fighting over who's right, which campaign's right, Mr. Armstrong said in 1973, remember, Britain's attempt to enter into that union, it portends a tragic situation. In the end, I mean, there may be some short-term benefits that give hope to some of the other EU member states to follow the course that Britain is on. But in the end, the sickness in Britain will worsen. The relationship between Britain and the United States will unravel. And poor Britain will be isolated and alone. The future is, as Mr. Armstrong described, in passing, right there in that 1982 sermon, not hanging together. The two will hang separately. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself.
The Trumpet Daily.
And welcome back to the program. If you'd like to email the show, don't forget to send us your comments, td@kpcg.fm. We had quite a few emails come in following the exciting news from last week. This one here from one of our female listeners. Hi, I'm super, super excited. Prophecy is being fulfilled. What a time to live to see these things happening. What a time to be alive. We got into that on Friday as well. To be out there proclaiming the truth of God. This one here from Canada. What an incredible event has just taken place. Our family was glued to the computer screen as the live updates kept streaming through last night. In between, she's talking about what happened late Thursday night. In between, we talked about Mr. Armstrong and this being his signature prophecy and the impact that it was going to have on spiritual and physical Israel and the EU. We couldn't go to bed. We had to know. It made me flash back to 1989 when we watched the Berlin Wall come down. My son was about 3.5 years old and my daughter 1.5 years. And here we are 30 years later watching another epic event centering around God's end time Elijah. This will be forever burned into our memories. She says here, when I read in Malachi's message about the WCG's weak and pathetic response in 1989 to the collapse of the Berlin Wall, I wrote in the margin, this was their Jonah moment. They ran from their responsibility. And now it's up to us and our families and our children to pick up the weapons that they left scattered on the battlefield. Thanks, she says, for the excellent program. I got up early to hear you live today because I had to hear what you had to say. And quite a few others, as I say, listened in to Friday's show for obvious reasons. Another listener says, if ever you've had trouble coming up with material to run a daily radio program, I think those days are over. All kinds of prophecies and events are about to race along. And, well, I actually sent out a tweet before Friday's program, jokingly, saying that there wasn't much happening in the news. What should we talk about today? There's plenty of material, for sure. Another listener says, as a student of music from a young age, I felt compelled to mention the tone of voice that I believe has been developed within you through God's Spirit and your cooperation. Seems I'm always turning it down on account of fear of that it will disturb the neighbors, or perhaps even possibly penetrate the cement block commonly called my head. Anyhow, I'm confident that you all will keep increasing the volume and intensity. Some of us are despicably dull of hearing, wink, wink. So there's one that appreciates the enthusiasm and the volume. Some few don't always appreciate that. In any event, one last one here. Another listener says, it has been an exciting week with the fulfillment of the prophecy concerning Britain leaving the EU. To see this prophecy come to pass right before our eyes has been stunning. It's wonderful to hear your thoughts and comments as well about this matter, which adds to the excitement. Now we wait. Now we wait for the 10 kings in Europe and the strong man of Daniel 8. We know that your program, as well as all of the PCG outlets, will be blessed as you spread the word of God to all of the world in every department. So some good responses coming in. Some responses to the news on Thursday and the program that we had on Friday. I was told that our Watts operators, our phone operators, took a number of calls. Well, one man called in and just wanted to congratulate us for getting it right. He was well aware of the prophecy. He was well aware of what we've been saying. And there were 7 or 8 others who called in just to express how excited they were, like some of these emails are bringing out. How excited they were about the fulfillment of prophecy, about the pace of events, prophetic events. We received an email from one lady. She runs a call center in one of our regions where we have a regional office. And then basically she runs the service for after hours when our staff is going home for the day. Then the phone calls that come in, it kicks over to this service, this company that this lady runs. And so she's been working with our church for a number of years, and she's fairly familiar with some of the things that we teach, somewhat familiar with our magazine, The Trumpet, the booklets and such. She sent us this comment just today. Wow! Wow, she says, I remember reading one of the Trumpet magazines or articles about Britain and how it would leave Europe. Mr. Armstrong predicted it in 1965 or something like that, I believe. Do you have a soft copy of that you can send through to me? Can you send me another copy of that, what he said, what Mr. Armstrong said? I seem to remember that he said this in 1965 or something like that. There's someone who knows what God's church has been saying. You look at the website traffic from last week. Monday through Thursday, each day, we had 8,000 to 9,000 visits to the website per day. 8,000 or 9,000. On Friday, we had 31,000 visits. So the website traffic more than tripled on Friday, and Saturday pretty well kept pace. 21,500, or no, 22,500 visits. Tripled the audience size just with one news event that had many people saying, wow, I remember reading one of the Trumpet magazines or articles about Britain and how it would leave Europe. Friday, also, just to throw some more stats at you, we had more people listen to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show than any other day this year. Friday was our biggest day of the year. We're 6 months into 2016. Well, I didn't go back and look at the stats from 2015, but the audience size was considerably lower. I mean, early on when we just started, of course. So I suspect that means that Friday was the biggest day we've ever had for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. 1,722 people listened to the program, or one of the programs, on Friday. Most of them, of course, listening to that Friday show on the British referendum. Saturday, we had 1,626 plays on SoundCloud. This is after we typically have had maybe 800, 900, or 1,000 per day. So it nearly doubled on Friday. And it kept up pretty good on Saturday as well. Friday's program now, I just looked at the stats this morning before heading over to the studio here. But that show, Britain on the Way Out, it now has more than 2,200 plays on SoundCloud. It's the second most listened to program this year. I've told you before about the February show, Take Yourself to the Challenge, and how there's, for whatever reason, there's quite a few Filipinos that are excited about that show. So it's circulated down in the Philippines through social media or wherever. But just in 2 or 3 days' time, Britain on the Way Out, it's now the second most listened to program that we've produced. Now, all of this means, too, I told you about the monthly stats last week or the week before, I think it was, and how that it's been trending upward from 18, 19,000 plays per month in January, February, then up to 24, 25,000 plays in March, April. And then in May, we were up to 28,000. And for this month, we've still got 4 days left in the month, but we're on pace to surpass 30,000 SoundCloud plays for the month of June. The first time ever to be up over 30,000. It's heading in the right direction. Well, on TV, the subject of the program, it wasn't on Britain specifically, but it did more broadly look at the subject of Bible prophecy. Where are we in Bible prophecy? That's the video that played over the weekend. I believe that's going to be posted today. We wanted to leave the video on the British referendum up just for a little bit longer. But this new one on where are we in Bible prophecy, it'll be posted today or tomorrow on thetrumpet.com if you'd like to view that. But we advertised Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, and then also the King of the South booklet. I've been just kind of anxious to try to fit in the King of the South because we haven't advertised that one very often over the last year and a half. And, of course, there's been so much happening in Iran and with the Middle East and the chaos that's down there. But we offered those two booklets, and all totaled, we had 209 requests come in over the weekend there in the UK. Another great weekend of 200-plus requests. Last weekend, you'll remember I told you about the third repeat program for the most important book since the Bible, Advertising Mystery of the Ages. And we had 217, I think it was, and then with the residuals added in on top of that, all totaled, we've had 230 requests. So just in the last two weekends, over the last 10 days, we've had 439 requests for material, for literature, coming in just from the UK region. Most of them right there from the UK, a few from the European continent as well. Finally then, too, I'll just give you some updated stats on the Armstrong College Correspondence Course. Again, this pertains to the UK region in particular. So far this year, we've enrolled 437 students in that Bible correspondence course. The year is about half over now. So 437 new students to that course. And the MPC staff back in the UK tells me that over the course of last year, the first 6 months of last year, we added 125 students to the correspondence course. So that, too, shows a really solid increase. All totaled, we have currently, we have 2,685 students taking the course in the region. Remember the email address if you'd like to contact the show, td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Why did Great Britain have such a positive influence on the world? Was it because Britain was just better? Were the British inherently more powerful and more equitable? Great Britain spread not only its language, but advancements in agriculture, industry, science, commerce, banking, infrastructure, education, and the list goes on. Entire nations, great nations, have their common law and their representative governments because of the influence of Great Britain. The empire served its own interests, to be sure, but it also advanced its beliefs. It spent much of its treasure, its sailors, its soldiers, and its lives to fight slavery and to rid the world of barbarous practices. Not always because it was economical, but because it was right. Where did those beliefs come from? What were those laws based on? Some may argue that they're just common sense. Some may say that the British are, or were, inherently a better people. Britain's laws were better. Its virtues were better. But not because its people were naturally better. It's because of what Britain's laws were based on. British law traces back beyond the Empire. It traces back beyond England, Scotland, Wales, or Ireland. It traces back through Britain's earliest ancestors. This heritage reaches back not hundreds of years, but thousands of years. It links directly back to a surprising yet familiar source. The virtues and laws of Great Britain don't trace back to a few philosophers and theorists scattered across the past few centuries. They aren't the result of impersonal forces and random historical texts. They trace back to one source. That source was an absolutely perfect law and government. And through the centuries and the millennia, the tighter Britain has clung to that source, the better its laws have been. Understanding that source explains where and why our British ancestors succeeded and where and why they failed. And more to the point, it explains what we today so sorely lack. To find out where British culture originated, read Britain's 4,000-year-old history. This book is adapted from The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong. That book was read by 6 million people around the world, far more than a Times bestseller. Request Britain's 4,000-year-old history and prove the identity and future of Britain for yourself. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Yesterday, my 23-year-old nephew was married. As I said at the start of the program, we had a beautiful wedding that we were able to enjoy yesterday on campus. And, of course, seeing my nephew come down the aisle brought back lots of memories, as it always does when I return to Edmond, just being a part of this work from the very beginning. My nephew was born in 1992 when the church was just getting started, really. The church was so small back then, just a few people supporting the work in a small complex there just off of Waterwood in downtown Edmond, a little condominium that we converted into an office, a few offices in that first suite. But on the day that my nephew was born, my father recorded his first episode for the Key of David program. We recorded it late in December. We went on to television in January of 1993, I believe it was. just starting out. Well, that first suite in the Waterwood Complex, Suite F, I think it was. Then we added suites to it over the years. C, D, and E. And we were pretty much taking over the complex as the work grew there in the mid-1990s. I was married in 1997. My nephew back then, I mean, he was, I guess, 5 years old at the time. He was in the wedding. He was the ring bearer. Early on in my marriage, we, of course, had the court case to contend with or to work through. That was really the dominant theme in the first few years of me being newly married. As so many of the resources in this church were put toward fighting for Mystery of the Ages, fighting for the book that says, among other things, Britain wouldn't be a part of this forming empire in Europe. We spent the last few years of the 90s and the first few years of the 2000s fighting for Mr. Armstrong's literature. We purchased the land for this new campus, which continues to grow today. The first chunk of it was in 2000. We started the college in 2001. It was a mustard seed beginning for sure. We won the lawsuit in 2003. Tremendous victory. And then the growth here on campus, the addition of this MPC facility in which we have the radio studio now. That came along in 2004, I believe it was, the Hall of Ad in 2005. We graduated our first group of seniors in 2006. We formed an association, an alliance with Dr. Alat Mazar that same year, regularly sending over Armstrong College students to support the Big Dig in Jerusalem. In 2008, we broke ground on the House of God, Armstrong Auditorium. We dedicated that house in 2010. A couple years after that, we started actively looking for property over in the UK, starting first with Brickett Wood, Mr. Armstrong's old campus, just north of London. Well, as many of you know, that eventually led to the Edstone purchase in 2014. And the expansion of God's work in the UK in 2015. And then I come back to Edmond, as I say, and you see all the growth and the development continuing here at headquarters. The beautiful Performing Arts Center that's being built just across the way from the field house. And yet when you witness a beautiful ceremony like yesterday with a relative that grew up in this church, that was born in this church, you think about the history, you think about how fast time goes by, and of course you think about the small beginnings. We've all been there. We were all little infants at one point or another. Talk about a small beginning, even before the birth. A tiny pinpoint beginning. And with respect to the work, look at where we are today. It's important to get that perspective. It really does remind us of what God has done and how He's doing it. Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, it says in Zechariah 4. It's by the Spirit of God. And God wants us to look to Him and to His power and to also be reminded of that mustard seed beginning. My father wrote in Malachi's message, perhaps the church's biggest problem today is despising the day of small things. They despise it. The Laodiceans despise that history. They won't hold on to these truths, these prophecies. They won't act on this. And that's maybe their biggest problem, like is brought out in Malachi's message. Look at the work. Look at how it's grown. Look at where it is today. What an opportunity it is, as some have pointed out over the weekend, to be here supporting God's work with when all of these prophecies are being fulfilled. Well, again, I want to remind you of the email address. If you'd like to email the program, make sure you send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. That's all that we have time for today. Thank you for listening. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.